Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOReporter at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to episode 56 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by Scott Lance.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Has anyone ever called you Scott Lancelot?
Back in high school, I got that a fair amount.
Ah, man. So I'm nothing more than a high school bully. I'm disappointed. I'm going to come up with a good intro for you someday, Scott.
It was more like a high school friend.
Okay. All right. Would you say that we're best friends, Scott?
We are best Hearthstone buddies.
Okay. I'll take that compromise. That's good. Can we get matching tattoos that say that?
Temporary tattoos, maybe.
Okay, fine. But we're doing it with rainbows in the background.
I actually have those here. My daughter just picked some up recently, so I'm sad.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Awesome. There we go. Good. All right, so let me assume that, is that why you're happy this week, Scott? Because you got sweet tattoos?
I am happy because I just got back from 5 days at Disneyland, which, as we all know, is the happiest place on Earth.
That is literally the happiest you could be. Five days is a lot of days. Did you run out of stuff to do, or were you still going?
Nah, man. Well, so, you know, it was like 2 half days on the ends, but still. Mm-hmm. And we had to go to the airport pretty early on the last day, but the park opened at like 7 a.m. and we were there and we were riding the rides and we got almost a full day's worth of stuff done in like 3-4 hours. It was great.
Nice. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what was your favorite ride?
Favorite ride. Well, they just opened up the Haunted Mansion in Nightmare Before Christmas mode. Right.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, that's right when we were leaving. So we got to ride that. And then they brought out a Jack and Sally and we had our daughter meet them and sign the little autograph book. So that was cool.
Now, is your daughter young enough that she's scared of Jack Skellington? Because that guy's kind of creepy looking.
She actually likes Jack and Sally a lot. She bought little dolls with a gift card given to her. So she bought the dolls while she was there. But the Haunted Mansion did scare her a bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They're spooky ghosts. They are singing most of the time, though. I do like that.
It's true. We made the mistake of taking... I'm going to show what a bad parent I am. We took her on the Tower of Terror, and we prepared her. We're like, okay, it's going to be spooky, and it's going to go up and down a lot. And she said she was up for it, and we kept trying to explain to her, and... we tried another ride that we thought that, you know, she might find scary too, and she didn't have any problems with it. But yeah, she said she was fine. She said she liked it afterwards, but she didn't want to go on it again.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I don't do great with heights, so that ride was not very fun. All right, so I'm happy, Scott, because I've been destroying people in our H1Z1 Battle Royale tournaments in the office. So, you know H1Z1, right?
Yeah.
Scott?
Yeah.
Right. So, for people that don't know, I work at Daybreak Games, formerly SOE. H1Z1 is like our zombie survival game. They have a Battle Royale mode, which is basically like Hunger Games, essentially, right? Where you drop in anywhere between like 100 to 200 people and last man standing. And we're doing a big tournament at TwitchCon, and it's the first time we've done something like this. So, we've been doing 2 internal playtests every single day where the whole company goes over and does a tournament, and then they try and fix bugs and figure out what went wrong with the tech side of stuff, get that all going. But I've gotten, and whoever gets first place, you get your name written up on a board, you get a little prize, that sort of stuff. For a while, I've been usurped. I was the only person on there who'd won twice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it felt good. Like, I was walking in and people were like, oh man, Josh, oh, the ringer's here, all this sort of stuff. And I've never been good at shooters. So this is like a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me, Scott.
So what's your secret? What's your tactic?
Oh, here's my tactic. Avoid having to shoot as much as possible because I'm awful at shooters, right? So I basically went through strategy where, because The big pressure of the game is that gas starts on the outside and closes in until you're forced to like a tiny little circle, right? That's how they force you to fight. And I'm always on the outskirts, finding the best like routes that I can take to avoid conflict, but stay within the circle and keep my back to the gas, because then you only have to watch like 180 degrees in front of you, run 360s. And dude, berry bushes. I've never known that berry bushes could save your life, but they're just the right height that if you crouch and kind of get inside them, you can hide your character model. So I've spent countless hours crouched inside of berry bushes, frantically looking in 360 degrees, waiting for someone to come up. And then when they get close, you pop out of the bush and shoot them with the shotgun. It freaks them out. It's good fun.
Now, I do a lot of hiding in berry bushes, but without the shotgun, and I'm talking real life, but you're talking in game, right?
Yes, I'm talking in the game. I have not actually hidden in a berry bush in real life. I imagine it would be a lot more sticky and prickly.
It is, man, but I've spent countless hours, countless hours.
That's going to be a story for another time, because I've got to hear this story. But I feel like it's going to take the rest of the show. Maybe we could start a side podcast that's like berry bush stories. It's like haunting tales of things that happened inside berry bushes.
The spooky tales.
The spooky tales. Perfect. We'll get Jack Skellington to be our model. So obviously this week, we're wrapping up our review. So last week, we reviewed the neutral cards. This week, we're reviewing the class cards for the Grand Tournament. So our format is going to be similar to last time. For each of the classes, we're going to choose the best card to craft, the best card to dust, and the best card to draft in Arena. So we're only doing one pick for each because there are 9 classes, and that's already 27 cards. And a review is kind of meaningless if you pick all the cards. So we'll just jump right in, I guess. Scott, you want to go first with Druids?
Yeah, man. We got the Darnassus Aspirant. This is a 2-mana cost, 2/3, which is not bad. Battle Cry, gain an empty mana crystal. What? That's got the wild growth effect built in, but Death Rattle, lose a mana crystal. So basically, while he's alive, you get an extra mana crystal, although if you can do some shenanigans like polymorphing him or silencing him or returning him to your hand or putting him back in your deck, or you know, some of these other effects that do anything other than just outright kill him without, or while he still has his ability, if you can do any of those things, you get the mana crystal and you get to keep it. But even if you don't, while she's alive, you do get the extra mana crystal.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that it has kind of built-in anti-CC, because as the opponent, you really don't want to do anything to this other than kill it. I mean, because a lot of times when troops come in with like effects like this, you're like, oh, I'll just silence them, no big deal. But silencing is actually really bad here. It blew my mind when someone described this card to me as a mech warper that applies to every card in your hand.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, because I always thought mech warper, oh, yeah. Well, that's an auto-include in every mech deck, right? And suddenly this is that, but for all decks.
Interesting. You don't get the, you only get the cost reduction once per turn and not on the turn you play it, but yeah, it's a pretty close comparison.
Yeah, so this is our best card to craft for Druids, so I'm really excited about it. Yeah, I think this card is great. And the effect, the golden effect is really cool. Flower petals falling down all over.
Yeah, they did a good job with the gold effects in this set.
Yeah, you can tell, like, because the first set, you can kind of tell, like, it's just the art, but they've put animation on top of it. And this one, there's a lot of special art going into these golden effects.
Yeah, I think most of the art in the first set, it all started, I believe, as flat 2D art. And I think a lot of it came from the original World of Warcraft trading card game.
Yeah,
from Cryptozoic. Yeah, and I think now they're doing custom commissioned art for the cards.
Very cool. All right, so what's next?
All right, the next one I have is, this is the best to draft, and this is Mulch. 3-mana cost, destroy a minion, but they get to add a random minion to your opponent's hand. So, pretty cool. It's kind of like an assassinate, but 2 cheaper, but you are putting a card in their hand. And it's not just a card, it's a minion. Although, since it is a minion, there's a higher than average chance that it will be a neutral minion. And it's also not something from their deck. So there's probably not going to be synergy, and it could just be a bad minion.
Yeah. So, Scott, I have an important question for you.
Yes, sir.
Does a golden mulch give a golden minion to your opponent?
Ooh, I would expect so.
Because that, I mean, Scott, that's a little downside right there, buddy. You don't want to be giving your opponent, you know, moral boosts over there with their sweet gold minions.
I prefer to think of it as a courtesy.
Oh, okay, there you go. Yeah, I mean, I really don't worry too much about the downside here, because random minion, like you said, the chances of it being, you know, really strong at the time, have any sort of synergy, is pretty low. And the cost you get is really good. I mean, if the natural comparison here is Naturalize, right, which is another druid card, destroy a minion. It's two cheaper, but your opponent draws two cards, which are cards from their deck, and also two instead of one. I mean, this looks really solid.
Yeah, this is better than even just giving them or letting them draw one card from their own deck, because the quality of these on average is going to be significantly lower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially in Arena, where like removal is so key, and a lot of times you only have to remove one big threat because that's all their deck has. I mean, this sort of just blanket removal is always super valuable.
Yeah, you don't want to be using this on cheap minions either. You want to hold this for something expensive, because they are going to draw a random minion. It's probably going to be a lot cheaper and therefore not as good, but they are going to have to pay for it again, which is kind of nice. But either way, like, you don't want to be casting this on their one or two cost minion or even their three cost minion, or it's just not worth it.
Yeah. Cool. What are we dusting?
Astral Communion. This is a four cost epic spell. Gain 10 mana crystals, discard your hand. So the good news is you have lots of mana. The bad news is you get nothing to cast with it other than top deck cards.
Yeah. I mean, you already had four mana, unless you're, I mean, maybe you're innervating and stuff to cast it earlier.
Yeah.
So you're really gaining maybe something like six mana crystals, discarding your whole hand. Man, and if you do top deck this card, I mean, it's worthless.
Yep.
Yeah, I just don't see it. This feels like one of those cards, like, maybe, like, in the future when there's some synergy with discarding your hand and, like, you draw cards when you discard or something, maybe you could make it work. But, yeah, current game, I don't see anything here.
Yeah, I hear you. This is, it's too finicky. It's too unreliable. You're only going to have two of these in your deck. And even when you draw them, it's kind of like Deathwing. It's like, well, it's almost like your last gasp, but at least Deathwing puts a 12-12 on the board. This does nothing.
This does nothing.
The ways to make this work are to have a lot of card draw spells in your deck so that hopefully you're drawing one of those after Astral Communion, and then you can start casting multiple cards a turn. Alternatively, you can try and have some things on the board that let you draw cards, you know, Acolytes of Pain or something like that. So then you cast this to flush your hand, then you try to get some cards back. But I don't think we're going to see any sort of high-end decks to make this work. This is a novelty card for novelty decks, and maybe some sort of Tavern Brawl deck.
Yeah, Tavern Brawl deck seems like one of those things where if it's one of those ones where, like, you're fixed at one mana or something, and maybe this lets you bypass that and suddenly get 10.
Now, in that case, I tried to work around that one mana restriction.
Oh, really?
A lot of different ways, including Innervate, and they gave me nothing. Even Innervate didn't work.
Wow, okay. Yeah. So they're hard and fast on those rules. So before we leave Druid, Scott, I got asked about one card I thought for sure you were going to pick. Living Roots.
Oh, yeah. I like Living Roots quite a bit.
Okay. Is there something about it that made it just not quite as good?
No, I just thought that Darnassus Aspirant and Mulch were pretty good, but
okay.
I put Living Roots up there. I think they gave Druid a lot of love. They also gave some Beast Druid synergy. I thought they were all good picks on it. Well, not all, but there were a few good picks in Druid.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Yeah. I'll take over from here, Scott. We're doing Hunter next. You want to talk Beasts? Let's talk about Bear Trap. A two-cost secret, after your hero is attacked, so it's after your hit, summon a 3/3 bear with taunt. This guy is incredible, right? It's great stats, so it's two costs for a 3/3 bear with taunt. And Scott, one thing you brought up, and actually I'd love to hear you talk more about, is kind of the crossover with Explosive Trap and why it's particularly valuable.
Yeah, it's interesting. I still haven't been able to figure out if it's more advantageous for them to add new traps to the game that have the same trigger criteria or not. And I think what I came up with is either way, as they add new traps, they're sort of making all secrets for that class better. Because in this case, because it shares the same trigger criteria with Explosive Trap, it's after your hero is attacked, they can sort of poke around the edges and they can figure out, okay, well, it's not Freeze Trap and it's not Snake Trap, and but they don't know if it's Explosive Trap or Bear Trap. And so now they used to know how to play around it if they could triangulate which trap it was, and now they can't. Now they have to be prepared for either of them. And the mere fact that, the others in the game, regardless of what you're using, does actually mean that they're going to probably play suboptimally in some circumstances because they no longer have the certainty of knowing what it is.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because these are probably the two best or most widely used hunter secrets too. So it's not like you're kind of gimping yourself to run both of them. You want to run both of them already. And so this question mark is just kind of a perk on top of it.
Yep. Yeah, and I do think Snake Trap is pretty darn good, and I do think the Freeze Trap is pretty darn good as well in the decks that want them.
Yeah.
Bear Trap and Explosive Trap do tend to do better in nearly any deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I will say there's a slight downside here of this is a very slow card, so it's great, right? You're going to get a 3-3 Bear with Taunt for 2 mana. That's obviously hugely efficient. But your opponent does get to trigger it. And so if they're in control mode, for example, and they're just trying to dominate the board, they can choose to postpone bringing this thing out by not attacking you and instead controlling the board. They can also work around it by, say, only doing direct damage or hero powers to hurt you. And if it's the if they're going in for the final death strike, they can just pump something up big enough to maybe kill you with one last hit. So this really doesn't do any much good at the end of the game. You really need to cast it when you still have a lot of life.
Yes.
Because you need to take one hit, and then it's probably going to prevent you from taking further hits.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of games where this actually, if you play it early, right, they proc it, and then really they have nothing else to do. They don't have the mana. They don't have cards to get rid of it. So you kind of get a 3-3 with charge, because you get to use him the basically the first turn you have him on the board, which is really nice.
Yeah, this is a fairly rare card for secrets anyway that's really good at the beginning of the game and gets kind of worse the longer the game goes on.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, draft. King's Elec. So we played with this in the Tavern Brawl bunch. It's a 2-cost, 3-2. Battle Cry. Reveal a minion in each deck. If yours costs more, draw it. And it's a beast. Which is actually really important for Hunter. Because the best kind of 2-drop for Beast Hunter was the Bloodfen Raptor, right? Which is just a 3-2 blank. There was nothing else on there. And, I mean, even if King's Elec is a 50% chance, that's kind of how I read it. I don't know how you look at it, Scott, but I look at it, Battlecry, 50% chance to draw a card. That's great. I love it. That's value.
So in an arena deck, it might even be a hair lower, because remember that ties are losses.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So if your deck is not built to take advantage of it, it's not necessarily great. But you know what? Taking a 3-2 beast, which is a fine serviceable card. I mean, these days I'd put it sort of on average in arena if you're playing a hunter.
Yeah.
And then adding possibly the ability to draw a card to it is great. I mean, even if it's, say, a 40% chance. But if you've got this thing, then you may be able to lean slightly more towards control and more expensive minions. I personally probably would have put this under best of craft, because I think it's better in a deck that you've constructed to be a little more control and a little more expensive, so that your proc rate can get higher than 50%.
Yeah. So what value do you hold on Joust for getting information about your opponent's deck? Because obviously you're revealing information about your own deck as well. Do you see any value there? Like, oh, look, a Malygos popped up. I know
right.
What their deck is now.
Not a whole lot, typically. I have learned a thing or two early. Like, I was playing a rogue, and I was surprised to see a Cold Light Oracle. It's like, oh, okay, well, he's a mill rogue. So, you know, I have to be a little more wary of mass removal. I should probably do what I can to hit him fast before he can get his loop on. I've also had cases where, you know, my King Crush gets shown to my opponent as a finisher, and then I notice that they're playing a little more conservatively with their life. It's like, there went that. But the good news there is I drew a King Crush.
Yeah.
A free King Crush. I'll take it.
Did you get to play him?
I did.
Okay, good. Let's talk about a card we never want to play. for psychological reasons as well as balance reasons. Ball of Spiders, a 6-cost spell. Summon 3/1/1 web spinners, which is a tongue twister in itself. I feel like I must be missing something here, Scott. I don't get it. Like, there is some synergies, right? You're getting tons of beasts. So any sort of beast procs that you're getting when they die or come into the board, awesome. A ton of RNG. I mean, you could get 3 King Crushes out of those web spinners. Mm-hmm. But there's just so many better things to spend 6 mana on, right?
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, you say, why am I spending 6 mana to get 3 1-cost minions? And the answer is, well, because you don't have to play all those other cards, and because you're going to be going through at least 6 beasts. Another way of looking at this is, though it's slow as heck, you are kind of drawing 3 cards, right? So you're not only getting the 3/1/1s up front, but you're drawing 3, and not just 3 cards, but 3 beast cards on the tail end of that, which is arguably above average in the deck that wants those. And if you look at something like Nourish from Druid, well, that's 5 mana for 3 cards, and this is 6. So I think if you were to see through all of the value of this card, which means you play it, you play the web spinners, you go through all the web spinners, you get the cards from them, and then you play all of those, and they live their lives and die, or help you win the game, then, okay, you've probably gotten your mana's worth. I actually do believe that. But that's such a long time. And we've just described like 5 turns beginning to end, and it can't start till turn 6.
Yeah.
So that's why it's not that if you see the value through, it's bad. I think it's fine to slightly good if you get all the value out of it. It just is so much work to get all the value out of it.
Yeah, and it's by the time you're drawing those 3 beast cards and then playing them, you're playing them up against 8 mana cost minions, which can easily 2/3/1 your little beast that you dropped on the board.
Yep, I agree. And there's probably some interesting synergy with things like Scavenging Hyena and some of the beast synergy cards, but it's just too much work.
Yeah, so weird. Also, spiders are awful, so you don't want them. All right, next class, I'm taking this one to Scott because I couldn't let you have it. I love it too much, which is a new feeling for me. We're doing mages. Up first, best to craft, Ronin. So this is actually the legendary we opened last week on the show, so people should be familiar with it. It's an 8-cost, 7/7, with Death Rattle. Add 3 copies of Arcane Missiles to your hand. And Arcane Missiles is the 1-cost spell that is deal 3 damage randomly. Or it deals 1 damage 3 times to random dudes.
Right.
So, I mean, I've said this a bunch last week. I just got super into spell power decks. He fits perfectly into that. But the thing I like about him is, unlike Malygos, which is kind of the other legendary that goes into spell power decks, Ronin actually feels like he's pretty good in any mage deck. He's really strong with spell power, right? But he's still just kind of value by himself. A 7/7 and 3 arcane missiles for 8 mana is great.
Yeah, there's a deck archetype out there called Tempo Mage. I have a spin on it, but it's pretty similar. I just call it Spell Mage. But it's lots of things that proc off of spells. It's not about spell mm-hmm. power, but it's about procing off of casting spells. And Ronin does really, really well in there. There's so much good synergy opportunity. You've got you've got Archmage Antonitis. You've got Flame Wakers. You've got your Mana Worms. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I want to point out that those 3 Arcane Missiles, while Arcane Missiles, a lot of people don't particularly care for that spell, 3 of them adds up to 9 damage for 3 mana compared to, say, Avenging Wrath, which is 8 damage for 6 mana. So you get more damage for half the mana cost. And you can break it up into installments. You get 3 spell triggers. You get 3 enhancements of spell power. I mean, it's bananas. It's so good. And the 7/7 for 8 isn't actually that much of a premium. It's about a mana and a half premium to get that. This is well worth it.
Yeah. Awesome. Best card to draft. We got Polymorph Boar. So this is one we're a little less in agreement on, Scott, because I'm super hyped for this card. It's a 3-cost spell. Transform a minion into a 4/2 boar with charge. So you can do it to a friendly minion or an enemy minion. It turns into a 4/2 with charge. So I love this card, right? It's great on defense. It's great on offense. I'm using it in the spell power kind of proc deck, similar to what you were saying, Scott. A lot of times when you have like Flame Wakers on the board and stuff, you play this and it procs the damage. Sometimes it kills it as well. It's cheaper than Polymorph Sheep, right? Polymorph is normally 4 cost. This is 3 cost. Fun fact, though, that I did not expect is when you play it on a minion, it resets the attack counter. So a lot of, like, say I have a 4-4 on the board, my Azur Drake. I attack for 4, and then I polymorph it, and he can attack again. And then you can polymorph it again, and he can attack again. As many times as you can do that. I've actually won a couple games now with just dishing, using it to deal basically 8 damage to the face by casting on my own dude over and over again.
Yeah, it is versatile. I'll give it that. It is not efficient. So it can be used two ways, right? It can be used offensively and defensively. And offensively, you're saying you're going to use it to do 4 extra damage, which is fine if you're going for the kill, but you are essentially sacrificing one of your own minions to do that. So you're really only talking about 4 the kill in that scenario.
Yeah.
I'd rather just have, say, a fireball, you know, instead of doing 4 damage for 3 mana, I'd rather do, say, 6 for 4. And then on defense, I don't want to give him 2 hit points to kill him, because part of the value of polymorph is you either don't worry about the 1-1 at all, or you can at least throw your flame blast, your hero power at him and knock him out. You can't do that with this. So you're going to have to spend either a whole other card, well, actually a whole other card, like a minion on the board or something out of your hand, something to actually kill them that turn. Otherwise, they get a 4-2 on their turn they're going to come at you with. And you just spent 3 mana and a card to give them a 4-2, which is presumably smaller than what they had. But, I mean, how much smaller can it really be? So I look at both those scenarios, and I'm like, man, I'm spending 3 mana and a card, and maybe, like, in a case of offensively, and another card, and I just don't feel like I'm walking away with that much.
Okay. See, the big thing for me is getting it down to 2 health. When they drop a big fatty on the board, and you suddenly give it 2 health, and you can trade it with your 1-cost minion, or like a little token you had out there, plus your hero power. I don't know. I've had a lot of good success, but I think a lot of it, to me, is the versatility that you bring up. That it's never amazing, right? There's always, for whatever you're using it for, there's always a card that does that one thing better than it does, or more efficiently than it does. But it does like 4 different things, and that to me makes it super valuable.
So you, man.
All right.
Draft away. I will not compete for this card.
All right. That's a deal.
Yep.
All right. Best to dust, other than Polymorph 4, if you're listening to Scott over there. Flame Lance. 5-cost spell. Deal 8 damage to a minion. It's a common card. So, I mean, this card is just... It feels so worthless, right? There's already so many. Mage is not lacking removal. It has no shortage of ways to kill minions. And this is just so expensive and so restrictive.
I agree, man. I mean, it's a lot of damage. It feels like it's a giant killer. I don't know. I don't need a giant killer quite that bad. This feels like it's about the same level of cost efficiency as Fireball, give or take, except you can't hit face with it. So I don't know. It's a pretty big premium for such a big limitation.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, even with Fireball, I mean, how many times are you doing overkill damage? I mean, with this, I imagine you're doing overkill damage a lot of the time.
Yeah, totally. And I would compare this most directly to the rogue spell Assassinate. Right. Mm-hmm. Except that Assassinate will do the job, period. This won't get through the Divine Shield. This won't get through things with, you know, a huge number of hit points like Ysera or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure, most of the time it'll kill whatever you're aiming at, but it won't always. And so, I mean, if you're just doing a pound for pound comparison, it just shows Assassinate is way better than this. And that doesn't necessarily mean this is bad, but if relative to another card, it's distinctly worse. How good can it actually be?
Yeah, it's weird because it's so close to Fireball.
Yeah.
In cost and damage and all that sort of stuff, but it's just worse. So let me give you 2 community opinions on this card from the Hearthbone comments. This card exists for one reason and one reason only. to avoid the new expansion diluting Mage's wonderful removal options in Arena.
Mm-hmm.
So you think this is going in there just to make sure that draft, you aren't getting fireballs. Sometimes you're getting this, and then you're like, oh, sad days.
That may have been. That's interesting. Mage felt like it was in a pretty good place before. It felt like one of the few mm-hmm. classes that didn't need a whole lot of help. And I hadn't thought about Arena, diluting things in Arena, but yeah, that's a good point. I mean, this is a common. It does help with board control, and I think it helps do what Blizzard wants mages to do. But Fireball was just, people just stockpile them in their hands and then go for the kill unexpectedly. And this does kind of fix that problem a bit.
Yeah. All right. Next comment. This is the first card that's ever been balanced by its golden animation. Because this is probably the best golden animation of any card I have seen, Scott. It's got the lance going through the middle, and then like the circles around it are rotating around it. It looks incredible.
I am totally mesmerized by this thing. It is amazing.
Yeah, the stars are even moving in the background and stuff.
Yeah, and you could tell they totally removed like all the little circles off the non-gold card, because the ones on the gold card are actually aligned differently.
Oh, you're right.
It's probably just the best golden animation I've seen.
Yeah. So there you go. That's how it's balanced. It's so cool that you're going to want to play it anyways.
Oh, man. All right.
All right. You're ready for some Paladin action? Right. Oh, dude. I'm so ready for Paladin action.
So the best to craft, I have the Murloc Knight. I do love this guy. Yeah. He is a 4-mana cost 3/4, so he's a mana shy on the vanilla test, with an Inspire effect of summon a random Murloc. And it should be noted that the Murloc Knight is, in fact, a Murloc. So there is a chance that you will get him.
And it is the best feeling when it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I even got him off of a Neptulon in Shaman. I was.
Oh, really?
I played Neptulon, and a turn later, I'm like, I just didn't even pay attention to what I drew because I figured it'd be a bunch of tiny guys. And I'm like, what is this Paladin card doing in my hand? And it took me a while to realize, oh my God, he's the Murloc I drew. That's cool. But yeah, so summon a random Murloc, and there are some good ones. You can get another Murloc Knight, and that synergy adds up pretty quickly. There are some big Murlocs, even though, I mean, not huge, but there are some bigger Murlocs. And if you can get two or three casts of these things, and I think this is by design, a lot of the Murloc cards buff other Murlocs. So you can build up a little bit of an army that self-synergizes there, but that'll take a few turns to do that.
Yeah, I just really like how many tools Paladins are getting to keep their board full, right? Because mm-hmm. old school Paladin, I mean, that's all they needed, right? If they could keep the board full, if they had stuff to throw buffs on, they were happy. They could win games. And between this and the Silverhand Regent, man, there's a lot of very cool ways to just tap that hero power and boom, your board is filling up like crazy. The thing I like about this one is the Silverhand Regent is kind of boring. Like, it's just, okay, you get 2 1/1s, that's great. And Justicar Trueheart, great, you get 2 1/1s. But this guy, I just love the anything could pop out of there. So fun.
Yeah, there is kind of a cool Inspire / hero power Paladin going around. You get Justicar Trueheart, where you get, so your power makes 2 1/1s. You bring out a Murloc Knight. Suddenly you're casting a whole army of dudes every time you use your hero power. It can get ridiculous.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I played against one as like, okay, do a full board clear, very next turn. Oh, his board is full again. No big deal. He spent 2 cards to fill his whole board. That's cool.
Yeah, and they're weenies, but I mean, weenies can get the job done because they can trade or they can punch face. And the thing is, a lot of times I've noticed, we've talked a few times about, is it better to have, for example, a 3/3 or 3 1/1s? And I think the answer differs on different situations. And I think on average, those are on par. But one of the situations where it's great to have a lot of small minions is when you decide that you're on the offensive and they have, say, 1 or 2 big guys and you have a board full of small guys because they can't kill all your big guys or all your small guys. And they're wasting the attacks of their big guys if they even try to chip away at it. So a lot of times they'll try to punch face, but if you can get just a little taunt to get in their way, or, there's so many interesting opportunities there. That's where something like, I think a Noyotron works really well in a weenie deck for that very reason, because you can drop him alongside all these other things. And if they've got 1 or 2 big guys on the board, well, the Noyotron's going to stop them and you're going to be able to punch face with a whole board full of guys again next turn.
Yeah, which, I mean, is the equivalent. I mean, it's 5 damage a turn, right? It adds up.
Oh, at least, yeah.
Because when you look at those 1/1s across the board, you're like, 1/1's no big deal. But every turn, it's 5 damage. It's like a 5-5 just sitting there punching you face in the face.
Yep, and with quartermasters, and I forget what the name of the new guy is, but that gives all the Silverhand recruits +1 attack.
Oh, yeah, the horse trainer or something.
Yeah, yeah. So people get scared leaving stuff out. They spend a lot of energy trying to kill him, and for good reason. Murloc Knight, when he comes on the board, is a lightning rod, as he should be, because I think he's a highly efficient card. I think he's a very strong card. And if they don't kill him, you will probably end up killing them.
Yeah. Very cool. So, Scott, before we move on to best of draft, there's one card that I've been seeing a ton lately that I wasn't sure if it was going to be your best to craft yet. So I got to know your opinion on Mysterious Challenger.
Yeah. It's made its way into a few decks for sure, and I'm running it in mine. Pretty good. You know, I think some of the Paladin secrets are actually underrated, you know, overlooked.
Yeah.
And for one mana, you know, they can't be too great. They can't, like, compete with sort of the mage secrets on average. But there are some gems in there. And if you have, say, 2 or 3, I think I'm running it with just 2 copies of 2 different secrets in my deck. But that's enough, right? Because if I'm sort of drawing and automatically playing 2 1 mana cost cards for what amounts to a half mana premium on Mysterious Challenger, because it's 6/6 for 6, right? Yeah. So you only need like half a mana's worth of value out of them. And how many times are you not, like, even one secret on the board more than pays for that? If you've built your deck to support him, you're not going to ever draw dry on that guy. I mean, how many times are you going to have played either played all your secrets or already have them in play? I mean, those are the times you should just hold on to them and play them as soon as your secrets fire.
Yeah, I've actually seen it. One deck I played against, it procced 4 secrets, which I feel like might be diluting your deck too much
right.
at that point.
Yeah.
But actually, with just 2, I mean, I can think of 2 secrets right now that I would definitely want in my deck at all the time. So, I mean, that mm-hmm. seems worthwhile.
I'm a huge fan of Avenge. Redemption in some decks is okay, but your deck kind of has to be built for it. There's the new one that gives +1/+1 to everybody on your board. That thing's kind of hit and miss, but it can be really, really efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, that one doesn't fire if you have nobody on the board, so it's a little safer than people think.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, it will fire if you have only one guy on the board, and in that case, it's not particularly efficient, because you spent, you know, essentially a mana and a card for just adding 1/1 to your side of the board, and not really under your control exactly. So I try to have at least 2 minions out, but if I think they're going to kill everything on the board, or if my side of the board's empty, I'm fine. Like, I'll cast it on turn 1 if I want. If I, for example, I'm going to cast the 3 mana cost, bring 3 1/1s into play.
Oh,
muster
yeah.
for battle.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's good uses for it. It's better than it looks.
Very cool. All right. Sorry to derail you there. What's your draft card?
All right, my draft card is Seal of Champions, and I know this one's a little controversial, but this is a 3 mana cost spell, common. Give a minion +3 attack, boo, and divine shield. So I think part of the reason people kind of frown at this is just how expensive it is. Because you can get +3 attack and divine shield. I think those are both 1 mana cost cards for Paladin. Divine shield might even be 0 cost. But I argue, in practice, this is very strong. You cast, it basically uses his removal. You cast this on something, you attack with it, you will probably trade for something, it'll lose its divine shield, but you essentially traded Seal of Champions for whatever it was that you killed, and the creature that's left has +3 attack. So it does require an attack of a minion, which means you need a minion on board, so that's sort of the cost, extra cost that it's asking for you. But otherwise, I mean, we would talk about things like Flame Lance. Well, there aren't many things that you can put +3 attack on and not kill what you're trying to kill. I mean, there's sometimes, right? You got a little tiny guy and you're trying to kill a giant. Okay, one swing might not do it. But still, this does work a lot. And I've actually used this just sometimes to punch face with something like behind a top minion that I've got Blessing of Wisdom on. I'm like, screw it. I'll add a bunch of attack to it. I'll give it Divine Shield for some extra survivability. I'll attack. I'll draw my extra card. And now I have to get through my top minion and this guy. They probably won't, which means next time I attack, I'll do even more damage and get my Blessing of Wisdom proc again.
Yeah.
So I think on paper, it doesn't look that great. In practice, I think it actually delivers, because the two effects are two effects that really want to go together.
Okay. So when I saw this card, I immediately thought of Scarlet Crusader, right? Because it's the same cost, and you get a 3-1 with Divine Shield.
Sure.
don't know, I'm worried about going all in on one minion, right, and giving them an option for a 2-for-1.
Well, except, so I hear you, except that you only want to cast this on a minion before you attack with it that turn.